Good morning and welcome to the new episode of the IP Breakfast with attorneys Albert Decatur, Emmanuel Coffey. Good morning, counsel.
Counsel, good morning. Good morning to everyone listening to us wherever and at whatever time you may be joining IP Breakfast. The only thing is, hopefully you're having coffee.
Yes, of course, coffee or tea, whichever your preference is. But please have something as we talk about the IP Breakfast. Counsel, we did miss a couple of days, so we want to bring to our audience that we took a break because of the Thanksgiving weekend here in the States to give us a break to bring new material to the audience. And today we're going to talk about what?
Well, today we're going to talk again the importance of IP in this new world of ours.
Yes, we're always talking about IP. Yes, go ahead, counsel. Counsel Coffee.
Yes,
sir. Yes, so let's talk about more about intellectual property. As we always talk about intellectual property, let's remind the audience the importance of intellectual property in the world of commerce and taking the importance of taking their ideas and actually protect them and somehow bring it to market.
Right. Again, if I can quote from our book, The Value of Your Ideas, on page 20, we report that the rapid growth of IP coincides with the emergence of the digital economy, with the five largest companies by market cap changing. So in 1975, the largest companies by market cap were IBM, ExxonMobil, P&G, GE, which is General Electric, and 3M. However, in 2018, they are Apple, Alphabet, which is owned by Google, Microsoft, Amazon, and Facebook. So that's a sea change from 1975 to 2018 in this digital market. And today, they've just announced that China is claiming supremacy in quantum computing. So, it's on.
Yes. So, so The Value of Your Ideas, the book that Counsel Coffey just quoted from, it's a book that we just published. You can find it on Amazon, Barnes Noble online, and Trafford website was our publisher. It's definitely a worth reading, talking about how rapid the different industries are changing, and IP is driving all of that.
IP is indeed driving all of that. And we may add, in this era of COVID-19, look at Zoom, right?
Yes, they Zoomed.
Yes, you're right, they Zoomed. Had we known to pick up a few shares today, we would have been very happy.
Yeah. So so ideas are things that some ideas, like teleconferencing, was not an idea by Zoom. However, right, Zoom did not invent that teleconferencing, but they certainly made it extremely more popular to the common man. I remember, there was stuff like Skype, there's WebEx, there's Google Meet, there's a lot of teleconferencing software that is available online, but each of them somehow function differently with some gadgets the ease of use is also something that also keeps the market going toward one provider than another. But you're right that Zoom is certainly one of the winners of these during the COVID era here.
So if you have an idea out there, that's what this podcast is about. We want you to be able to make use of it and be the winner in this fight, this digital market, digital economy. They're also talking about 5G and all these other, the 4.0 revolution in digital technology. So,
well, I mean, there's a lot of things when we talk about intellectual property, especially during the COVID time. We are talking about vaccines, for example. There's a race for who's going to come up with the best vaccine. Without mentioning names, you know, there are three type of vaccines out there they, based on their studies, have different efficiencies. And the market is who will have the efficient vaccine to corner the market. And obviously, this is a pandemic. This would be about 7 billion people need to take the vaccine, or at least a good 70% of it is what the experts are saying needs to take the vaccines to have herd immunity. If you have 70% of people that take it, then the risk of the others getting affected is much less, and also it won't overwhelm the hospitals, and so they can manage the other 30%. So IP is all over that.
Yes, sir.
And for our audience who are mature, talk about the Patent and Trademark Office. They have made provisions for inventions that are dealing with vaccines and the COVID to go through the system in a much quicker way than they would have in regular times.
So, that's a good point. Yeah, medical and what are those other types?
Yeah, but we talk about those, you know, biotech. We just spoke about high tech. As well, like when I say high tech, we're talking about, you know, something that is digital zeros and ones. But obviously, there are other ideas that also is important. As we talk about COVID, our next guest, who is Annabelle Pierre, we will introduce her soon once she joins us. Created a game that is becoming pretty popular during the COVID period. So ideas are not necessarily biotech or high tech. They can be as
are not limited to that.
Right.
Yes.
So they can be ideas, and everything is helpful as we talk about her idea, and we'll introduce her in a few seconds. That has a lot of impact during the COVID period as well. So I do notice that she's joined us. Good morning, Annabelle.
Good morning, Albert. How are you doing?
We're doing well. And I'm joined also by Emmanuel Coffey, who's another attorney.
Hi.
Good morning,
Hi,
Annabelle.
Emmanuel, how are you?
Yeah.
Welcome.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, no, thank you for joining us, and sorry for the technical difficulties this morning. We usually are seamless, but this morning we ran into a snag. But thank you for being so flexible and moving the time with us to do this program. So we were talking about, Annabelle, was intellectual property ideas, and Emmanuel gave some ideas of high tech like Zoom, and we also talk about vaccine, but we also wanted to introduce you and say some ideas are different. Like your idea is a game, and this game is pretty useful during this COVID period, because everybody is trying to find new things mm-hmm. to do, and we do know that isolation and boredom is up, and even suicide,
yes,
is up during this period. And having a game that people can talk for an hour, and it's also a good socializing game compared to a lot of kids are within their iPad or iPhone, and they don't socialize. And your game, let's talk about your game a little bit. But
Council, before she does that, I'd like to ask Annabelle to introduce herself to our audience. Tell us a little bit about
yourself.
Thanks,
Emmanuel. Sure. Well, my name is Annabelle, as you both know. I'm 33. I was born and raised in Haiti. For the first 8 years of my life, at least. And then I grew up in several countries, mostly in Africa, but I was always attached to my Haitian culture. I graduated high school in
Can you cite the countries that you were in Africa, since our audience are also in some of these countries, and they will be glad that you spend time in the country.
Sure. So I spent some time in Burkina Faso, in Cameroon, and in Zimbabwe.
Awesome.
Yes.
Great.
So I graduated high school in Zimbabwe, and then went to college, in Southern Virginia, because my family, my sisters, and my dad lived in the DC area. And then I studied in international relations, and I actually work in the development field right now, and just started my own small business, which is How Haitian Are You, the game.
Awesome. Yes, tell us a little bit about the game, How Haitian Are You?
Sure. So it's a cultural and trivia game about Haitian culture. My initial thought was to target it towards Haitian diasporas, because there's some questions on there about how we all collectively grew up in a diaspora. So mostly the questions range in from history, geography, sports, gastronomy, Creole proverbs, and cultural related, family related questions about how we grew up.
So it's not only a game, it's really a way to pass on information about your culture. Right?
Exactly. So actually, when I thought about this idea, I thought it would be great. It's an intergenerational game in a way, because it's also a teaching moment for parents to teach more about, to play in a more fun way, to teach more about Haiti's culture and history and things like that.
Annabelle, what led you to the idea?
So it's interesting. So last year, around May 2019, I went to a get-together where they played some type of similar game, but from another culture. And it just inspired me to make my own about Haiti's culture, because we have such a diverse and, grand culture, that I thought this would be a really, really fun game for us Haitians to have. So
now I'm going to confess that I do not own the game yet, which I will purchase it for my family. I've seen it on Facebook. I've seen you having fun with friends, and it seems like everybody's having good fun.
Yes, it is definitely a fun time. It's definitely a good pastime for an hour or two, depending on how long you want to play. Now there are 78 questions, and mostly it's a game that you engage in friendly debate sometimes with some questions, because they're not just true or false questions. So there are questions that have one right answer, like the history questions would have, true or false, that's non-negotiable. But there are questions that's a little bit suggestive depending on how you grew up. So those type of questions, engage in friendly debate. It's like, oh, I remember when my mom did that, but my dad was a little bit different. So there's that, fun aspect of it as well.
Annabelle, could you, for those of us or those in the audience who may not be familiar with Haiti, could you give us some features and maybe like historical features of your game?
You mean some of the questions?
Right, some of the questions pertaining to the history, for
example.
So
I have a question about which hero of Haiti's independence died at Fort de Joux in France? So that would be, Toussaint Louverture. So some people don't know that. So that's a question that can open up.
I love the idea, because it's not only especially for my own kids and for any young kids growing up in another culture, not just the American culture, where it is very difficult to actually keep the culture going. And here you are actually teaching the kid something, a fact, while it's actually a fun
game.
Fact,
yes,
right?
Exactly. That is the goal. Yes. One of the goals.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So let's you had the idea and you said, I don't know if you know much about our book, which is The Value of Your Ideas, Make Intellectual Property Work for You. It's exactly what we are trying to culminate with our audience, is that when they have an idea, they have to take steps to get it out there into something more concrete. An idea is just an idea. It doesn't do anything until you actually actuate it, do something with it. So tell us about your steps that you took to move from idea to design to product to market.
Yes, sure. It was definitely a journey. You know, when I came up with the idea, you know, I had it in my head for about 2 weeks, thinking about it, you know, if I was going to go for it, like you just said, or not. And then I became fixated about having that experience of Haitian and Haitian American culture in a game type of way. And once I decided that this is something I really wanted to do, and convinced that other Haitians would enjoy the game, and it could be also, you know, a learning opportunity for some kids in the diaspora, I started talking about it to a few confidants. And then my next step was to start coming up with the questions. And throughout the whole process, you know, I consulted with people from different generations. So I had boomers, I had Generation X, I had millennials and Gen Z, mostly to come up with the multiple choice answers that don't have the right or wrong answer. Because, for example, I have a question about, you know, what would your parents say if you're talking too much in their ears? And then, you know, the questions are in English, but some of the answers are in Creole. So it's like "Vite tranquille" or "Bam la paix." So just depending on what your right, just depending on what your parents will tell you. So that's why I consulted with those, you know, the different generations, to make sure that I had a choice, you know, a variety of choices and I have multiple choice answers.
And the idea is not really to win, right?
Exactly.
It's more like have fun and laugh.
Exactly. Just have a fun time with fellow Haitians, or even people who don't, you know Haitian culture can also learn about it. And have a good time. Yeah, and then, you know, for the questions I have a right answer, I consulted for the history questions, for example, I consulted with my dad, who's like a history buff, to make sure, you know, those questions would be entertaining, and, you know, that some of the questions you'd be able to learn, people, you know, they wouldn't be very obvious questions. So once that was done, I had a first prototype that I had printed. And then once I did that, I asked the same people I had consulted with earlier about their thoughts and their design. And then I think the majority of people, decided that the design could be better. So we all agreed that the design needed an upgrade. And from then on, I reached out to a Haitian company in Haiti called IET Brand, who then rebranded my entire game. So from the logo to the color, the design of the cards. And, you know, I intentionally wanted to partner with a Haitian creatives. So I intentionally went to a Haitian company to do the design and the logo of my card.
So why did you want to work with a Haitian designer and a Haitian company?
I just think it was important for my vision. You know, this is a Haitian game, and I just think that, you know, it just made sense for me producing a Haitian game to go to my people for them to.
And I guess the other thing is that you are trying to create jobs.
Yes,
where there's
that
the,
was the
where
mm-hmm, jobs, exactly. Right? That was the other point I was going to make. Exactly.
Yeah, this is awesome. So now, in our book, we talk about ideas by themselves don't become anything. And in order to actuate that, you have to take action. So we actually have a whole formula that we develop, which is ideas plus action equals success. Mm-hmm. So you've taken action, you've developed the game. And so who's manufacturing it now?
Yeah, so actually, as I was just saying, you know, I purposefully wanted or tried to have a Haitian company exclusively work on this game with me. But then I hit a roadblock when it came to printing. I actually tried to go to a Haitian company in Florida that does, you know, printing. And it just didn't work out because their cost was way too expensive. And so I went to China. So I found a company through Alibaba and I contacted them and I've been working with them.
Awesome. I mean, you know, the world is flat, right? So we work with, you know, to get our ideas out, we can have different components created by different people. Obviously,
right.
You want to go, it's a, you know, you're creating a business out of your ideas and somehow it has to make financial sense to make the game. So now that the game is created and manufactured, where can people find your game?
Sure. So you can find it on www.howhaitianru.com.
What is the name? What's the name of the game?
It's called How Haitian Are You?
How Haitian Are You? Mm-hmm. Okay.
So, a few more questions. So, is that the only platform where they can buy the game right now?
That is. You can find my social media on Facebook, on Instagram and Twitter, How Haitian Are You? All the letter R and U. But that is the only platform for now where you can buy the game.
Have you ever considered like things like Amazon?
I think, you know, in the future I will consider it, but I've only been selling not even for 2 months now. So right now that's just the main point of selling. Yeah.
I really encourage looking into Amazon.
Yes, definitely.
They can do drop shipping where you. They can buy and sell the game for you without you getting too much involved in it. Yeah. So another thing we wanted to discuss with you, you took all the steps from idea to selling, and obviously the game is a success. I've known about it from social media. It's making its way around. And you're learning the different markets for
yes,
it.
Yes, indeed.
which turned out to be different than what you expected.
Exactly.
But I'm glad that it's having some success. Now, you know, with everything that has success, and this is why we do this program mainly, right? Everything that has success is that people want to just come and take success and not do the hard work of, you know, thinking about it, designing, but now everybody will want to benefit from it. What step have you taken to protect your game such that it's not being sold everywhere without your own?
Well, so my game is copyrighted, so the content and the rules of the game are mine. The trademark, you know, I hit a little bit of a roadblock on the trademark because the name of my game is too descriptive. But I'm, you know, I'm still trying to see how I can trademark it, but right now it's just, you know, that's something that had I known, I would have named it differently. But yes, I'm still trying to push for that trademark right now.
Okay, so obviously you're going to program. Go ahead, counsel.
I said your message to the audience is that, especially when you are embarking on such an endeavor, that you should consult with an IP attorney.
Exactly. Exactly. You got it. Yes.
Yeah, I mean, that is the other. We have a whole chapter on the book which talk about whether you actually need an attorney or not. And we do recommend people listen to, of course, IP Breakfast. They'll learn a lot. We give a lot of information on where informations are. For example, the Patent and Trademark Office in the United States. you know, trademark is taken care in Haiti by the Commerce Department, and the copyright is the Office d'Edouard Auteur. Yes. You know, people who listen to us, they'll learn all these things, they'll learn to find information. However, it's a sea of information out there. Like everything else, you can learn it on your own, but do you have the time to actually learn it on your own? And, you know, we always advise that at least they have a consultation with a consultant. Mm-hmm. Doesn't have to be any of us, but they should check with a counsel. That will lessen the issues and hopefully, yeah. But we're glad that, you know, you've taken all these steps and it's actually exactly what we talk about in our book, you know, and we do want people of all generation to take advantage of what goes on in their head and take their ideas and bring it to fruition and do something with it. And we just like the motto that your motto really fit what we've done in the book, which is somebody who's got an idea and says, okay, I'm gonna work on this and I'm gonna make it happen and I'm gonna take the steps forward. So we congratulate you on your work.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Council Coffee.
Yes, congratulations and continued success. And also, don't be a stranger. As you know, we have this podcast every now and then. Do come back and let us know how you're making out.
I definitely will. Thank you for having me again.
Yeah, we wish you much success. We are calling everybody to go to howhaitianareyou.com and procure this game. And it will make your Christmas even merrier.
Indeed. More family time in this confinement period.
Yes, exactly. You know, one less hour of boredom. And, you know, that it is a great game. It is a great idea. We really congratulate you on taking something from your head to make it to the marketplace. We want to see more of that in our community, more entrepreneurs like you taking steps and taking advantage of intellectual property.
But before you go, Annabelle, I'd like to ask you to tell our audience what did it take in terms of finance? How did you go about financing that?
I just took my savings. I mean, I really didn't have a choice here. It's just something that I really, really wanted to do. And I put my heart into it because it's Haiti and I love my Haitian culture and want to share it with, you know, the world and our people. And so, yeah, I just took my savings and went for it.
Yeah, and we wish you, and for people who are listening to this program, let's also put our part of the of contribution in there, not only for Annabelle to recover her savings, but also to make more so she can think of bigger things and bring us new products. So this is something that's also interesting to us, is that we need to start supporting each other, support each other's idea, and also those that support have the advantage of seeing other people do it and do it yourself. And the more we do, the better we're going to be as a community.
Yes, I agree.
Yeah, so thank you, Annabelle, for joining us today in our podcast. Council will continue with the book a little bit. I have a question for you. Regarding the book, where can they find the book?
Well, yes, they can find the book on the publishers, which is Trafford Publishing Company. They can find it on their website. They can find it on Amazon, Barnes & Noble. They can, by the way, they can also find it on coffeelaw.com.
Yeah, and the book comes into three formats. You have a hardcover, which I recommend buying the hardcover so you can keep it in your library. There's a soft cover, obviously it's cheaper, The hardcover is $24.99. The softcover is $14.99. And you also can get it on Kindle or any kind of electronic device for $9.99. And recently, I think if you buy it from Amazon, Amazon is running its own sale on the book, and you might even get the soft copy for $6.99. What a bargain!
Yes, definitely, it's worth the time to for you to pick up a copy. And also do let us know what you think about the book and any other subject, as we often ask that our audience keep in touch with us and let us know if there is any subject they would like us to emphasize, or if there is any guests that they have. If any other ideas or suggestions, please do reach out.
Yes, for time is running very quickly as we're having fun in the IB breakfast today. You know, throughout the week, if you want to contact me, I am on Twitter at ADECADY. That's at ADECADY.
And Council? It's at Coffee Law LLC, COFFYLAW LLC. Until we see you next time, be well.
Thanks and bye bye. Good evening, world. Welcome to another episode of the IP Breakfast with attorneys Albert DeCady and Emmanuel Coffee. Good evening, counsel.
Counsel, good evening, good morning, wherever you may be listening to us, in whatever time you are. And hopefully you are having either tea or coffee joining the IP Breakfast. Welcome.
Yes, this is indeed a great time. A lot going on in the IP world. Today, we're actually going to have a guest. And counsel, can you introduce our guest? It is not yet online. And as we wait for him, we'll do some more talk about, I guess, IP in COVID, because it's very fitting.
Yes, it is fitting to really talk about COVID. A vaccine is out there, and I guess UPS and FedEx and everybody else is getting ready to deliver the first portion, I should say, of the this COVID-19 vaccines.
Yes. So tell us a little bit about, I mean, this is kind of not the same conversation we'll be talking to about Ron, but tell them a little bit about who's our guest today.
Ron Hunter is an alumnus of Stevens Institute of Technology in Hoboken, New Jersey. I understand he also attended the Chicago Law School of Business. But when he comes in, he'll go into more detail into his background. But he's been in this business for quite a long time.
Yes. In terms of a second part of the segment.
Yeah, in terms of IP and intangible assets and startups and the process of getting your idea to the market and things of that nature. So he should he should bring us valuable information in that area. But in the meantime, we should also talk about our book of The Value of Your Ideas.
Yes, The Value of Your Ideas. The book is available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and a lot of other online vendors that you can find a book. It is, I think it's a good primer for anybody who does not know much about intellectual property and who would like to know what intellectual property is, and also how to take advantage of it. The most important thing is really how do I use this intellectual property for me, for my business or and any other propositions. But in a more theoretical and understanding of the world of IP is to look at IP in its global aspect and how it infiltrates every aspect. Like we were talking earlier today, we were talking about Mr. Hunter is with us. But let's finish this piece here, Council. When we talk about, COVID, and this week we had an announcement that the FDA has approved, and this, and also the CDC has approved the Pfizer vaccine, and it will be started to administer so we have a little bit of noise. Sorry for the noise. And so again, a lot of IP is going on there, and science in general, which is protected by IP, is bringing us a solution, a much needed solution for this situation and that's going on with COVID-19.
Yeah, although I may just add quickly that it's very controversial, this vaccine. There are a lot of, scientists of all backgrounds have ideas about the vaccine itself, but this is not the forum to address this right now.
No, but I mean, it is technology, obviously, right? You have a lot of technology. This is a new technique of doing the vaccine, and the world is skeptical about how it was created, how come it was so fast, the other ones used to take longer. And this is all about this new technology and this new that are protected also by patents. And there'll be a lot of invention in that realm. And see how it works. Obviously, it's been administered in England for about a week now. So there'll be more data. In the United States, it will be administered to different people based on a particular need, I guess, or people who should get it first. But obviously, there'll be each time a person takes the vaccine, it's an opportunity to have more data on how it will behave in a human body. But today we just wanted to talk about that. Again, our book, which talks to you about intellectual property, it's a must-have. It's the best gift that you can give someone during this holiday season. How to turn their ideas into something tangible and perhaps even make money about it. So instead of giving them a $25 gift, give them the gift of book. That's a gift that will continuously give to them.
It's a lifetime gift.
Yes, it's a lifetime gift. Council, we do have Mr. Ron Hunter with us today. I will let you do the introduction.
All right. Again, as Council stated, we have with us Mr. Ron Hunter. He's a prolific, marketing type of person, technologist, and I'll let him introduce himself. Hello.
Hello. How are you doing? Can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear
you well.
Thank you for the opportunity to join you fine men on this podcast. I've listened to other ones with you guys and really find it to be insightful and very helpful.
Great. Could you tell us a little bit about your background?
I'll give you a quick snapshot. Let's see. I have a bachelor's of engineering degree from Stevens Institute of Technology in physics. I have I did a double master's degree at the University of Chicago, doing an MBA and another degree in economics at the University of Chicago. I'm proud to note that when I was at the University of Chicago, my professors during the time that I was there, over a 3-year period, the professors that I was actually studying with, 5 of them got Nobel Peace Prizes during that time in economics. So it's known as the number one economics and finance school in the country. At the University of Chicago, most notably, I've worked for Deloitte Consulting, helping to restructure large companies. And then in 95, I left Deloitte to join, 96, I left Deloitte to join some small startups. I've worked in the venture capital industry, helping to actually finance companies. So I've sat on both sides of the table, raising capital as well as making the decisions on what capital to invest and how to structure those deals. I worked for a company called Scient. This is going to be very notable for our discussion tonight, because at Scient, we focused on startups, particularly for internet-based companies, but the methodologies that we developed and the thinking that we developed really apply to any startup. And I've been working with startup companies, helping to start companies, helping companies get financed since about that time. So I guess for about the last 30 years or so.
That is awesome. And that is extensive indeed, your experience in the field. Today we are, in this program, we are going to focus on the layperson who does not have the experience, the know-how, the knowledge to take an idea and move it forward to turn it into a product or and later on into a business. So we would like you to take us to the process. In our book, we talk about you know, how somebody can take an idea and protect the idea, whether that idea is something that is should be copyrightable or have a trademark or have a patent or kept secret.
Right.
So once they have, let's say they have an idea, they have seen an attorney and they have somehow secured their ideas, how do they go from that step to create a startup and fund a startup?
So one place I want to start is that I don't know that whether or not you know it or not, but or your audience might know it, but startups have a rate of failure of about 90%. Right, so, and it goes through years. So, like, during the first year, probably 30% of them drop out. And then during the second year, 30% drop out. The first year, around 21%. And then by the fifth year, you're going at 50%. And then by 10 years, you're upwards of 90% of startups fail.
And this is the reason for a program like this, right? To share best practices and share failures and successes with our audience, so that we can reduce that number, so that more of them become successful in the first try.
Exactly.
Now, knowing that Not every idea is going to flourish to big things, but with a program like this, with your what you'll be telling them, how can they start something and avoid these pitfalls?
That's exactly why I provided those statistics, is because in the last about 20 years, starting at the time that I was, 30 years. But started at around the time that I was at the company Scient, we started to formulate some thinking around how to scientifically create startups. Right? Prior to that time, startups were created by essentially a guy has an idea and he works really hard at trying to take idea to startup to bigger company. But there was no methodology, there was no framework to guide them. to make sure they ask the right questions from the beginning. In 1999, we started to formulate that and apply what's called the scientific method to creating startups. And utilizing that methodology, we were able to create companies like Hotwire, WebMD, Realtor.com, Major League Baseball. And essentially our hit rate was about 65%. That is, if you worked with us, you're still here. 65% of those companies are still out there, and at least four of them are multi-billion-dollar institutions. So what I'm about to go into is something that has been formulating over since the 2000 period, so about 20 years or so, not 30, about 20 years or so. And it has actually been documented now by Stanford, and it's being taught to their MBA students, and it's something called the Lean Startup. So I'm gonna give you the highlights. A person has a concept, right? Because they've been working in the industry, or like sometimes I use like a pizza parlor owner. You know, he wakes up one morning before he does a startup and he has a great pizza recipe. So they have some concept that they think will bring value to the world, or that they can monetize. But the problem with most startups is that they formulate them in what we call the closet. That is, they look at themselves in the mirror and go, oh, that's a really good concept. Let's go, withdraw all of our savings and make this happen. And that's where we see high amounts of failure rate over time, because they haven't gone through what I'm about to describe at the very first phase. And that is what we call discovery. The discovery phase is when what you want to do is take that concept, define whether or not there is a marketplace for it. Right? This requires research. If you don't know how to do the research, you can get with people who know how to do the research, but pretty much you get a lot of that research on Google today, right? Years ago, Google didn't exist. There's so many tools today to help you to not fail. You may have to make a little bit of investment if you want to hire a consultant like myself or others to help you to define that. But the first thing you want to do is say, here's my concept. And here's the group of people that I think will want to utilize that concept. And really define them, right? There are, the guy's name is John. He's an engineer. He has two kids. He lives in New Jersey. He uses this type of tech phone, right? You build something called a persona, right? And it's like person with the letter A after it, persona. And then what you want to do is go out and start with defining the marketplace, saying how many people are out there that would want to buy something like that, right? And what you're doing now is creating a hypothesis from the scientific point of view, right? That you believe that this many people will want to buy this type of service. Having defined that hypothesis and gone out and done the research and found that there probably is a population of people that want to buy this product, that want to buy this type of service, you would then go and start to define what that service might look like or what that product might look like. Once you're doing that, right, so you say, there are many different ways of coloring a wall blue. You can paint it with a paintbrush, you can use a hose. There are many different ways. Your product is gonna be one of those specific areas. So what you're trying to do is say, here's the product that I can do to fit my concept to go after this marketplace. And then at that point in time, you wanna go into something called a product market fit. You wanna be able to go out and recruit people that you would then ask with surveys, what do you want to do with this product? What might that product look like? And start to really push out the features. You might even do a little prototype, like maybe a drawing of the product, these types of things, and put it in front of people who might be part of that target audience and say, okay, would you buy this product? Right? So at this point in time, you're trying to test your hypothesis that there is a market, and then within that, that this product would fit that marketplace. Right.
So a lot of due diligence before you even go out there and try to implement the idea.
Before you implement the idea, before you get a trademark and a copyright, you're at the very conceptual phase. Right, this is like the first month of starting to even think about this, to say, do I actually have a market? Is there a market for what I'm talking about? And do I have a product that would fit that market? Right, and you just want to take a sampling size. And there are lots of tools to do that today, right? Email surveys, Facebook, right? Online surveys. There are many, many tools that are very cheap that you can get out there and collect that type of data.
A person who wants to do that, who doesn't know how, there are help out there, right? I mean, like you said, there are tools, but if I still don't know how to use the tool, there are people who sell these services that you can consult.
Exactly. You know, right? So working with Emmanuel, I sell my services. I do this for a living. But yes, there are plenty of services that you can look up online that do this. There are consultants, but make sure you read the backgrounds of the consultants, because there's a huge fake consultancy also out there. Right.
You must do
your due diligence, or even the people that you're dealing with, right? They should have, you know, you should be looking for their YouTube videos. One of the first places that you should go is to LinkedIn, right? Because the LinkedIn will show the resume of the person. And although you can't verify that they did most of that work, you can see the consistency of the work that they've done over 5, 10, 15, 20 years. Or, you know, if they're younger, you know, what their last assignments were, that type of thing. Sometimes if you're about to spend real money, you know, you can even ask them for references, right? Where you'll be able to call their past clients to see how well they did. Right, see, that's the beauty of ratings and reviews these days, is that, you know, a lot of these services are being rated and reviewed. As well as, like I said, you can ask them directly for references.
So let's assume that you know, due diligence is done. You do the hypothesis. You do some surveys, and the numbers look good. Now you've met with your attorney. Your attorney guides you through the process and decides with you what type of intellectual property that you should secure. And let's say you've done that step. Since we've dropped counsel, Coffee dropped the call, I don't know what happened. So we won't talk about that, since we also have that. We have some segments, some episode about those process of getting patent, trademarks, and copyright, and so on. And it's also the subject covered in the book, The Value of Your Ideas. So let's leapfrog that and talk about the idea of, now that I have maybe a viable startup, but how do I start? I don't have much money to start the project. What are the sources of money that you would recommend somebody to get going from day zero and then move forward as a project?
Right. So, progression? And so there are phases to your startup. I want to talk about the word startup for give me a second. I want to talk about the word startup in general. That word,
sure,
just defines a form of company. it really is a definition of where you are and kind of your evolution of the company, right? So a startup is something that's going to go away, right? It's, you've started it up, and then you're going to hit a certain level when you start to actually get sales, that you're now a small business, you know, and then you're going to move through different phases of going to, you know, becoming a medium-sized business, if not a, you know, a large institutional corporation.
Yeah. Right, that's the goal. The goal is to become as big as the biggest guys, right? Right. But hey,
so you started your startup, and what you're doing. So now that you've defined that you have a marketplace, you find that you have this product, it is the perfect time to talk to the lawyers to make sure you get your trademarks and your copyrights done, because now you're bringing in more people that are going to be involved.
Hello, can you guys hear me?
Now we can hear you, yes.
All right, I got a question for you, though. Let's go back to the market study in terms of, what if your product is so new and revolutionary that you can't find any data for it? What about that?
That's a very good question. Then what you're trying to do, remember, when you are, your concept, any concept of a business is there to solve a problem for the customer. No matter how revolutionary it is, at the end of the day, what pain are you solving for a customer? So whether or not it is a new pizza formula, in which you're going to serve new pizza, right? You're solving my problem that I am a pizza connoisseur and I want to buy that slice of pizza because I'm going to like its taste. Or whether or not you're Elon Musk and you're going to launch new rockets that will go to the moon and do moon mining for rare minerals, right? Very different solutions, but they are solving a problem. And when you are defining your market may not have already been defined, but you can always find, are there large groups of people in which this is going to solve a problem for? And then if I'm solving that problem, what is the economic value to solve that problem? How much are they potentially willing to pay? Because when I solve the problem, they're going to gain this much value. Value being defined either by dollars or just what do they call utility, a sense of gain. They're going to gain that amount, and therefore they should be willing to pay this amount.
Yeah, but I'm not sure you. Let's say when Apple first introduced the first iPhone, right?
Yes.
There wasn't a market for it because
there was a market for it. The problem that if you read about it, and I've done like we've done case studies on that. The problem was that people were trying to walk around. People like listening to music, right? At that point in time, the way that you could listen to music walking around, you were either in your car on the radio or you would have those big boom boxes. But technology has started to miniaturize. Right, so even though it was something that nobody else had seen before, the problem of solving taking your music along with you was the problem that they were solving at that point in time.
Okay, so let's get back to the finance. Time is really moving. I think we're gonna excuse our audience for our this episode will be longer, just because we think that this is so much valuable information, and we really want our audience to have that information. So please indulge with us and
you'll probably have to do a series on this.
We probably will have to do that, but we'll let's get into the idea that we have the startup and we need some money. And I look in my bank account, I didn't find much. I need some money to get going.
So let's go through that process. The phases, right? That you're moving from the place where you've done the product market fit and you've you know, to find that there is a marketplace. Now you're getting to a place where you're going to, after you've talked to people about your copyright and your trademarks, you're going to probably start building a prototype so that you can get it out there so somebody can touch it, right, and interface with it. Then once you've gone past that phase, you're going to start to build what's called a sales roadmap and trying to figure out how are you actually going to sell this product, right? Once you have a, and what you're doing along the way is every time that you do something, it's kind of, there's a line of demarcation that comes, and once you're going over the other line, you're verifying the previous line, right? So I verify my product market exists. I verify that people will want my product. I've put a prototype out there, and I've verified how the people would interact with my product. Now I want to verify that they will actually buy it and how I would actually get to them as far as like through sales funnels. Once I have that, now I want to, now I have some customers, I have some dollars, and now I need to scale that. Along the same path is how you raise your capital and the sources. I put together a whole document on a one-page document that shows the correlation between those phases and where you're going to raise your capital from.
Right. So let's go through it very quickly today to kind of like, okay, I have an idea. I need some, I look for my bank account. There is a great idea, but I don't have much money.
So the very first place is friends and family. You're going to look into your savings account. You're going to go to your friends. You're going to go to your family. Right? At this point in time, you should not be looking to raise a lot of money. You're looking to raise money to get incorporated. You're looking to raise money to do those surveys that we were just talking about. Right? With that data, now you can start going. With that data, now you're going to build your prototype. You're still dealing with your friends and family money. Because what professional investors are going to look for is that you have at least some traction. You have at least some customers, right? So you have your friends and family money. Then you might, once you have like the prototype in hand with a couple of customers that are saying, I would buy that from you if you existed, right? You get that information. There are ways of configuring your surveys and getting information from them where you can see that a customer base is waiting for this product to come to market. Once you've done that, now you go into what's called seed capital. Now, the seed capital game has changed over the last 20 years. It used to be made up of essentially high net worth individuals, like doctors or lawyers, who want to talk about it. Remember, we used to always have this thing that, you know, and lawyers and doctors, they're going to come out and they're going to cut you a $25,000 check because they can afford to do that. And the reason that they're going to do it is so they can have something to really talk about at their next cocktail party, right? They can talk about the cool little startup that they've invested in. But yeah, so that group of high net worth individuals.
Yeah, they have to be accredited.
Yes, they are accredited investors. They're high net worth individuals. In America, you can get up to 35 non-accredited investors before you have to go to accredited investors. So that group of people right there that may not be friends and family, but you know, they're high net worth individuals. You get your next level of money from them. Then you get into the early parts of professional investing, which is called angel investors. These people are also high net worth individuals, but they are more professional in how they do due diligence. Those other guys, they're investing in you because of you. They're primarily investing in you and your concepts, and because they like you, and that's what they're buying, right? And because the concept sounds good, but they're really heavily investing in you. The next level, the angel investors, are going to be investing also in you, but they'll do more due diligence on whether or not the market exists and whether or not the product that you're talking about exists. And that's where all the surveys that you were doing in the first part of this come into play. They're going to read through those surveys. They're going to look at the business plan. They're going to look at your financial plan and make sure. A lot of places that people go wrong is that they put together financial plans that actually do not resemble the business plan. So the business plan might say, this is how we're going to sell the product. And then in a financial plan, they're not hiring any salespeople. So they look for problems like that.
Right. And also, I think there's a Work Act, which created the new finance mechanism for crowdfunding, which allows non-accredited investors to invest. At least we're talking
about crowdfunding, yes. America.
Right. So this is not something we'll be able to get into much today, but I wanted to just say it here today as a source. But I definitely think we're going to have more sessions. So in phase, you are in phase
once
one.
Once you've gone past your angel investors, now you get into venture capital, right? And so now you're at what we call the Series A, your seed round. Now you're into your Series A, and from there you get into very professional financing. But it goes along the same path of the phases that you are, and essentially proving your value. And this is very different than it used to be, right? When I, back in 99, you would go to a venture capitalist with just a 5-page PowerPoint presentation, and then they would cut you a $5 million check. But that didn't mean, just because you were able to put together a PowerPoint presentation, did not mean that you were able to create a business. Now they are more fine-tuned, and it's better for the marketplace because less crap essentially gets out into the marketplace. But yeah, so there's a whole path that we can discuss in future podcasts on the details, like what you need to have done, with each step before you get to the next step and before you get to the next groups of financiers.
Yes, definitely, Ron. I think we will have to send you another invitation to continue the process and get into a little bit deeper of the different phases for our audience. Our goal is to share ideas with our audience so that we reduce the learning curve, we reduce the rate of failure, and so everybody can have more success. And the more I guess success also breeds success, but also there'll be failures, and we have to take these failures as also part of the success, because every time you fail in something, it tells
you
one
other way. And that's a really good point that people have to understand. In this game of startup, there's a statistic out there that says before they have succeeded, most people have committed bankruptcy and or failed at their startup at least 7 times before they hit the stride, right? Because what they're doing, and this is a key thing that came out of the learnings out of Silicon Valley, is that there's two sides of failure, right? Where one is you failed, you're disappointed, and you've lost your money and these types of things. The other side is that you've learned what not to do. And if you learn,
right, fail and fail
exactly,
off, right? Fail and fail.
You know, and if you take away that process, learning, you can move forward and know not to do that the next time. But a lot of this, like I said, inside of the lean startup, the statistics, there's lots of data out there today that if you go and look for best practices, some things you should not be bumping your head against. You should decrease the amount of times that you've done, that you're going to do things that lead to failure, because there's a lot of data out there these days on what not to do, including this show.
Yes. A great way to end it for today. What we've learned today from our guest today, Ron Hunter, who is an engineer and also has a business degree from none other than Chicago School of Business. was running through us a couple of ideas. And one of the things that I will remember here is that you have to do your due diligence. Do your due diligence before you start putting money out. And we will invite Ron again to give you more. We hope that you like this segment. We're disconnected for some reason with
I'm here. Can you hear me?
Coffee. Ah, yes, I can hear you now.
Yes, I look forward to coming back.
All right.
Council
great.
Coffee.
It was again. It was a great episode, like you just said. We hope our audience will benefit from it, and hopefully they'll tune back in again when we do have Ron again on the air. And I guess time goes by fast when you're having fun.
Yes, since we have Ron here, I don't know if we'll come. Well, we won't ask you to commit online, but we will try to get. We will try to reschedule. Maybe we should continue this conversation next week, and so we can get into
next week the 20th works for me
the subject.
Okay,
all right, so there you have it. You know, so next week we will continue with more. If you didn't get all your answers, you can actually tweet me on Twitter. That's at ADKD, ADECADY, at ADKD on Twitter. And you can find us also at the value of your ideas at gmail.com. You can find
at Coffee Law LLC. It's at COFFYLAWLLC. Until next week, be well.
All right, gentlemen.
Bye bye now. Thank you very much, Ron.